No one likes to feel stuck, especially by your cloud. But the IBM cloud is the most open and secure public cloud for business. It can manage all your apps and data anywhere. Smart loves problems. IBM, let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/flexible.
This is The Sporting Life on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Here's Jeremy Schapp.
And this week, it is a pleasure to welcome to the show one of the most beloved figures at ESPN. I'm not exaggerating and I'm not blowing smoke. An old friend of mine, one of the very few people in the company who started out on the production side at the very entry-level position of production assistant, and it is now a world-renowned journalist, on-camera personality, reporter on the digital side, author, bon vivant, host of Marty and McGee, which I think follows this show on many ESPN radio stations. I mean, those few that carry The Sporting Life. We welcome the great Ryan McGee. Thank you for being with us.
I'm done. That was great. I'm going to just clip that off. I'm going to use that as my ringtone. And that was great. I love the fact that you used some French term that I don't know what that means, but I assume it was good.
Don't play the bumpkin with me, McGee. You know, I understand that's like part of your shtick,
yeah.
But it doesn't fly with me. I know exactly just how sophisticated and worldly you are and how well versed you are, especially in the romance languages.
No, it is. And I spent, speaking of the romance languages, I was in a used bookstore in Omaha, Nebraska just a few days ago, and there was your father's book. And I was like, it was like an antique bookstore. And I should have purchased it. Instead, I purchased a college football book that was written in 1908.
Well, I'm a little confused because you said, speaking of the romance languages, was it a French or a Portuguese version of one of my father's books? was it romance?
It felt romantic when I read it years ago. Maybe I remember it wrong.
We're speaking with the great Ryan McGee, who is fresh off, as you just heard, an assignment in Omaha, Nebraska, which is almost kind of like dead center, middle of the country. I guess Kansas City might be technically closer to the geographic center of the lower 48, but I think of Omaha as being right there as well. It was one of your favorite events, and an event that I think we can say is actually penetrating the national consciousness in a way in the last few years that maybe it had it in the past. I'm talking about the College World Series. What makes you love it? What's great about the College World Series?
Well, Jeremy, my favorite sporting events are the ones that are owned by their hometown. You know, I love the Indianapolis 500. I love the Daytona 500. I think about the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. Obviously, the Masters in Augusta, of the Kentucky Derby. But I love the events that have a home base and have had that home base forever, and how the city just they love it. And so what ends up happening is you have these generations of fans who have attended these events over the years. And the first College World Series I attended was with my father on Father's Day weekend. And we had, because of ESPN and cable television, we were a college sports household, and we were all like, man, one day, wouldn't it be great to get to Omaha? And my father and I finally did in 2001, and it was everything we had dreamed of. It was old Rosenblatt Stadium on the hill. It was the section we were sitting in the stands, those crazy Technicolor plastic seats they had at Rosenblatt, and we're sitting with a family that was the great-grandfather, the grandfather, the father, and then all the great-grandchildren. And they all had on hats of different schools that had nothing to do with the state of Nebraska. It was just schools that they had all grown up watching, LSU, Miami, USC, Mississippi State, you name it. And so I just fell in love with it. And it's still, even though we still call it the new ballpark, it's been 9 years, there's still that just a charm to it. And you just don't really experience that at a lot of sporting events.
We're speaking with Ryan McGee about the College World Series. He wrote a book about it, I think, when you were still in grade school, right? I mean, it was published in like 2007, something like that, wasn't it, Ryan?
Yeah, it was published. It was published in 2009, and it was my worst selling book. But I'm still proud of it. I actually found it in the nastiest antique store in the Old Market in Omaha. I did find a dog-eared paperback copy of it, and the guy's still angry at me because I just grabbed it and signed it without asking permission.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do when you write a book. That's what I was always taught because right. They say then, you know, they can't return it to the publisher. Obviously, this is a different situation because the book was published 10 years ago. But they say, you know, if you happen to be in a bookstore where your book is on display, sign it surreptitiously if you have to, because it might be a wives' tale, an old wives' tale. Then they can't return it to the publisher as, you know, what are they, unsold stock or whatever. So it's basically like making somebody buy the book.
And I signed your books.
You signed my book.
I signed a copy. Yeah, I signed a copy of Cinderella Man about 2 weeks ago. I signed it, You're a Jerk, WTH, Jeremy Schapp. And I stuck it back on the show.
Well, thank you. And I used to, you can tell the truth because it's unlikely anybody's listening. But I would go around bookstores. I mean, I wouldn't be a jerk about it, but you know, you kind of move your book to the front of the display, you know, to the expensive, you know, now those things, I mean, they have been for a long time. The publishers have to buy that space. It's not like you walk into most bookstores and it's curated. It's like, we're putting this book here because you love it. It's because they gave us X amount of dollars to put it there, which I thought was an injustice. So I took it in matters in my own hands, and I'm sure you did the same.
I did. I had a book just earlier this year with Dale Earnhardt Jr. and or about a year ago, and we were competing with Tim Tebow, a coworker of mine on the SEC Network, and we couldn't get past him.
Doesn't Tebow have enough? I mean, does he really have to?
We couldn't get past him on the bestseller list. So every bookstore I went into, I would take all of Tebow's books and move them into whatever. And I would take all Dale Jr.'s books and put them up front, and I would text a picture to Tebow's people and say, please make sure Tim sees this.
Did it work? Did it move you ahead of him?
No, never did. And, it's just another line that I stand behind Tebow in, because that's all of them.
See, I never got up that high where I had to be concerned about who was in front of me, but my father was very frustrated because he had two books that he wrote that were number two New York Times bestsellers, Instant Replay with Jerry Kramer, which was on for a very long time. I mean, of course, bestseller lists are a snapshot, as you well know, not about cumulative sales, et cetera, et cetera. We could go into that.
No, it's the fuzziest math of all math. I learned that. But no, Dale Jr. and I made it on the list for about a half a week at the bottom of the list, but we made it, and that's all that matters.
The Times list?
Yes, the Mooresville, North Carolina Times, but it was the Times.
I wasn't being skeptical. I was just asking. You know, I detected some attitude there. We're speaking to Ryan McGee, who's just been at the College World Series. I suppose it's incumbent upon us at this point to mention that Vanderbilt won in a deciding third game on Wednesday night after having lost the first game in the best of three to Michigan, which was making its which was hoping to win its first title since 1962. And from what I understand, I'm not an aficionado, but I do have a basic grasp of the concept that it's colder in the northern part of the country and unusual, therefore, to see northern teams get this far in the College World Series. What made Michigan special?
Well, it just doesn't happen. I mean, the last time a quote-unquote cold weather school is what they call it in college baseball, the last time one of those schools won the title was Ohio State in 1966. There's a tremendous stretch for the Big Ten from the mid-50s until 1966, where Minnesota, Michigan, and Ohio State all racked up College World Series titles, and then they just vanished. And that was the rise of Southern California. That was the rise of Texas, the rise of Arizona State. And then in the 80s and 90s, it was the Southeastern Conference. That's when LSU starts showing up, and that's when Mississippi State and Arkansas, all these schools start flooding Omaha. And so, yeah, for years it was the case. It was a much different sport then. It was a regular season that only lasted less than 2 months. The College World Series was typically over in early June. There wasn't an expanded NCAA tournament. And so, yeah, it's super unusual. But this Michigan team is led by a coach named Eric Bakich, who was an assistant at Vanderbilt, was an assistant at Clemson, and he attacked this job by saying, we're not going to use cold weather as an excuse. And we've seen teams before. Notre Dame made the College World Series. Indiana made the College World Series. But it doesn't happen very often. And we've never had a team, a quote-unquote cold weather school, become right up to, I mean, have their cleats up against the trophy, a chance to win the national championship as they did on Wednesday night in Omaha. So it was unusual. And now the question is, will he stay? Because we have seen schools make a run like this before. And then the Southern schools or the Sun Belt schools, the California schools call and they say, why don't you come down here to a place where you could do this all the time? Bakich told me on Wednesday night his heels are dug in. He believes that he can finally break the cold weather curse and convince other schools in the Midwest and the Northeast that they can do it too.
Speaking with Ryan McGee about the recently concluded College World Series, Vanderbilt emerging with, what is it, its third overall title, or it was its third appearance in the College World Series in the last 9 years? What's the math?
It's their second championship. Yeah, so it's I'll tell about Vanderbilt. So Vanderbilt has kind of become the gold standard for this kind of new age of college baseball, which is it's the same thing they're trying to sell in the Midwest and Northeast now. They use Vanderbilt as the example. Listen, Vanderbilt in the 20th century, Vanderbilt only made 3 NCAA tournament appearances. Now they've made 15 out of 16 since the turn of the century. And they've won 2 national championships. And they're in Omaha essentially every other year.
David Price. I think of David Price. And now we've got Tracy Rocker's son.
Yeah. Yeah. Kumar Rocker. And what an incredible arm and what an incredible talent, and attacks the plate like you would expect someone with Rocker DNA to do it. And so, but you know, what they have done there, Tim Corbin is the head coach, and what he has done there is it's a no-excuses program. And there's Vanderbilt, always kind of the afterthought in the Southeastern Conference, always, quite frankly, a lot of times, why are they even in the Southeastern Conference? And now, you know, I would argue that college baseball is the second most beloved sport in that conference, only behind football, and Vanderbilt now is the standard. LSU makes it to Omaha occasionally now, you know, and it's a big deal when these schools get there, and they don't really win titles anymore, and Vanderbilt is the standard bearer for the Southeastern Conference. And in the world I grew up in, Jeremy Schapp, I didn't think that I would ever see that, but now it happens every year.
Speaking with Ryan McGee, and I should say, Ryan, I regret this, but the only time I was ever in Omaha for the College World Series, I didn't even make it to the stadium. I didn't get to see a game. I went out there to see David Segee, the former Major League first baseman, and interview him about performance-enhancing drugs. He happened to be there because his son was playing in the College World Series. This must be like 12, 13, 14 years ago. I mean, it seems David Segee has like a son who's like 35. That seems impossible, but I think that must be a case. I guess I missed that. Before we let you go, as someone who has spent so many years at ESPN in so many different roles, someone who has an appreciation for the history of the place, for the culture of ESPN, what does it mean to you to see Bob Lee retire?
Well, I'm happy and I'm sad. You know, someone tweeted this out and said they now understand truly what the word bittersweet means, and that's how I feel. I'm happy for Bob because he's happy. I mean, you know that. And he's happy looking into his future. He's happy with what he's done in his past. But, you know, Jeremy, you and I both kind of made that crossover move from, you know, one day you're in the building working on production, and the next day, and possibly they've handed you a microphone. But I'll never forget, I was there for a job interview in the summer of 1993, right out of college, a nervous wreck. I'm waiting on Al Jaffe to come down and get me from the lobby of Building 3, and I'm sitting in the lobby, and the campus was not attractive then. And I'm sitting in the lobby, and there's Jack Edwards and Charlie Steiner and Dan Patrick, and they're all walking through the lobby, just going to work.
Like regular people, ambulatory people walking through the lobby.
Stars, they're just like us. And my hands are just shaking, right? There's Robin Roberts. And Bob Lee, of all that group, was the only one who he walked past me, and he pats me on the shoulder as he's inevitably walking across the street to go to McDonald's, which he used to do every day. He taps me on the shoulder, and he says, "Do you have a PA interview today?" And PA is production assistant. And I said, "Yes." And he said, "You'll do great." He said, "Just don't pass out." And just kept walking. But it was a moment that I needed. And I was loosened up. And I don't know if I've ever even told him that story before. But a year later, I start working at ESPN. And then sitting on the set with him at Outside the Lines, the couple of times that I was fortunate enough to do that, it was such a tremendous honor. And it's impossible to overstate what he has meant to ESPN. And, you know, it's another 79er, hanging it up.
Yeah. I've heard that 79er term much more in the last, few months than I ever had before. Well, that's a great story, Ryan, is what I should say. And, We're going to communicate it to him. We won't talk about that time you messed up running prompter for him. That was a different kind of reaction, I'm sure.
I do have a good Bob Lee prompter story too, but I'll save that for when you and I, next time you and I are in Manhattan eating Chinese food with too many drinks.
Next time at the Hall of Fame in North Carolina. Ryan McGee, the one and only. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jeremy.
I'm Jeremy Schapp. And you can listen to new editions of The Sporting Life every Saturday and Sunday morning on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, beginning at 6 a.m. Eastern Time.